This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line, back from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Sportsbook Studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy all week. Michael Lombardi here. We are just a few days away. Hall of Fame game coming up on Thursday. You can feel the excitement. It's tangible here in Vegas, at least, Michael. Everybody behind me is just watching Olympics, but ready for some football coming up this week. Big thanks to Jim Nagy and Richard Skinner for joining us in hour number one. Thought it was really interesting what Richard had to say as far as Joe Burrow still yet to get that same spin on the football as we've previously seen. I think that's probably the biggest thing, because we already knew Ja'Marr Chase wasn't practicing, and his contract situation continues to play out.
Yeah, I think that was important. I asked that question knowing the answer to it, and I wanted to hear what he said, and he was brutally honest, because everybody that I've talked to in the Cincinnati area tells me Burrow does not look, his arm does not look good. The ball's not coming off his hand very well. And Richard was very honest and forthcoming. And typically, you know, I was expecting him to say, yeah, he's going to be fine. But I thought there was reason to be concerned. And I think you have to be. You know, he's been cleared, but the ball's not spinning well.
And we that's the problem. Yeah, we do all these burning questions, right? But at the end of the day, I mean, that's the biggest question for Cincinnati. That is what the success of their team will come down to. It is the health of Joe Burrow. How effective will he be? Especially if you are, you know, somebody who's going to want to play, be ready to go week one, even if he's cleared. There's a difference between the Joe Burrow of old and a Joe Burrow who can't throw the ball in the same way. It's the absolute crux of their season.
Exactly. I mean, look, they're not good enough to overcome them. Jake Browning did a nice job. Of course, the defense wasn't very good. But now you add the fact that the offensive line is in a little bit of flux. And I thought he made a great point about Mims not playing much at Georgia, being a one-year player. And Trent Brown. Look, Trent Brown, the reason he's out there, Trent Brown could be the highest paid left tackle in football if he wanted to. The 49ers would have never got rid of him, nor would the Patriots. When he played well for the Patriots, you know, he could run block with anybody. Nobody gets in his way, but he's always out of shape. He's never really loves football, and you're always taking that risk with him, and that's dangerous when you do that. So for me, I think that's the biggest concern you have.
Absolutely, and it's something we will continue to dive into as far as the AFC North goes. This was the soundbite, Mike, by the way, from Mike Brown talking about what to expect here on Ja'Marr Chase, who is yet to practice in camp as he seeks a contract extension.
How hopeful are you that you're able to get a long-term deal done? If it's not this offseason, maybe next offseason, is Ja'Marr Chase?
He's a key player. Next to Joe, he's our next one. And he knows it. We know it. This may take a while. We are going to bend over backwards to get it done. I can't tell you when, though.
If you're wondering, Mike Brown is 88 years old. He sounds like a Michael based on
he's
that
such
comment.
A good man, though. But I got to be honest. He's a tremendous person, and he's honest, and you know, he has a way of running his company, and you admire him for what he's been able to do, following in his father's footsteps. He's a pure football guy. And, you know, and when he said this is going to take some time, Mike Brown's one of the most patient people of all time. He's not going to buckle. He's not going to move at all. And, you know, when you're dealing with contract negotiations with him, it's not going to be easy. When he says no, he means no. And I think he wants to sign Chase. But again, you know, the collective bargaining agreement was put into place so that the fifth year is a real year. Teams are giving away the fifth year like it means nothing. Like, they're just going to let Chase play, you know, yes, it's one thing to go into your fifth year to get a deal done, but it's harder. You know, you want to try to get something done, but this sit in and not play the fifth year is ridiculous. If you're Brandon Ayuk, you had one good year. Put two together. You know, it's like, you know, like, for example, some of the teams that have cap issues that haven't won. I mean, the Giants are 36% win percentage since Tom Coughlin left, and they haven't really won anything, you know. And so, like, but they're always stuck on their cap. It's like there's overpayment to players because people are scared to say no.
Point being, too, that you think about where things are at in Cincinnati. It's not like this is the first time. To your point, not that Mike Brown, he's a man of principle. He's been very, very consistent over the years with his approach on these sort of things. We'll talk another team in the AFC North coming up in a little bit as far as Michael's burning questions, as far as AFC contenders. We'll go to Baltimore coming up in our next segment. A couple other headlines, though, from around the AFC here, and it is that time of year, right? It's camp underway. You're going to start to see some injuries come out. This first was we touched on it briefly, but just wanted to get some more expansive thoughts here. We have an injury in Indianapolis. We also have a suspension in Houston where DeNico Autry, 6-game suspension for a PED violation, and it's a Houston defense that took a lot of steps in a positive direction last year based on expectation, but you know, you're in such a different role now, right? You go from worst to first. It's a similar spot to what Jacksonville was in last year. They really struggled handling that role. Now you have one of the premier pass rushers on your team out at least 6 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, look, all these things that, you know, when you're the top dog in the field and people are chasing you, you are always going to be, you know, it's everybody's Super Bowl when they're playing Houston. I mean, Houston's in preseason, they're going to be on the NFL Network, I think, every single game. And so, you know, they're a popular team. People want to see them. But I think when you break them down, you know, when you break down what they were doing, they were 30th in the league in allowing incompletions. Only Carolina and Atlanta were worse in terms of completing passes against them, which means they were doing a really good job. But the problem was their yards per attempt were 23rd in the league. I mean, that's those two things. People were making big plays against them. Now, I think Darryl Stingley is going to be really good. I think that's going to be impressive. But for them to play and be a great defense, they're going to have to play better in the back end.
I think Houston knew that, too, because Autry was brought in from Tennessee at a career best 11.5 sacks last year. The thinking was, yeah, you're going to need to bolster things to take that next step and live up to the billing now as a preseason favorite to win the AFC South. Also in the AFC South today, this is tough, where Samson Ebukam has apparently torn his Achilles. This report coming out after a practice yesterday. They just reported it, though, about a half hour ago. Ebukam, a part of a good stable of D linemen in Indy, but that room has now gotten a little less deep as a result of that injury, where it sounds like Ebukam will be out the entire season.
You know, he had 9.5 sacks, 17 hits last year on the quarterback. And I think, to me, one of the concerns you have with the Indianapolis Colts is the style of defense that they play is very – it's a soft zone. It relies on the rush. It relies on depth of the defensive front. Think about this, Ben. Last year they played – They played Derek Carr. He threw for 350 against them. C.J. Stroud threw for 337 against them. Stafford, 303. Aiden O'Connell threw for 286. Jake Browning, 274. Will Levis, 259. Yeah. So, and they've done nothing to improve their defense other than Latua, and now they lose their best pass rusher and their guy who hit the quarterback the most. So they're going to have to do some things scheme-wise to offset this, and that's where – I keep telling Elliot, our producer, are you sure Gus Bradley's a good defensive coordinator? Because the media wants you to believe he is.
Yep.
But when you look at it, they're fourth in the league in sack percentage last year. And yet teams were able to throw the football effectively on them.
It's a team that has a lot to be excited about, especially on the offensive side. But I can't get over, you know, the secondary, which now, you know, we're talking by proxy here of losing a key defensive line piece. Now, there's just less being covered up now by a defensive line that, yeah, you lose a very, very key piece there. It's like, as long as Juju Brents is in the starting rotation, that's a guy who's been picked on time and again, allowed over, I think it was about 9 yards per target on him last year. To me, it's the worst secondary in the AFC. I mean, Jacksonville's probably the other comparable team that has a really poor back end of their secondary unit. But as long as that's the case for Indy, when you have offenses like Houston in your division, you think about the schedule they face, some of the high-powered offenses, that to me still is a major, major red flag for that team going into this year.
No question. And, you know, and here's the thing that's interesting is they play it in a dome. So you get crowd noise. You should be able to have really good pass rush. The whole system is based on pass rush. The whole Pete Carroll system that Gus Bradley runs, that Matt Eberflus has run, is based on the ability of the front four to dominate the game. And when Seattle was good, when they had Cliff Averill, when they had, you know, when they had all their great pass rushers out there, Michael Bennett, you know, they were tough. But once you get tired, all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, like we saw at the Super Bowl, the 49ers played 71 plays in that Super Bowl. When you play that many plays, you wear down. You can't rush the passer effectively. And so all of a sudden now, because you start to wear down, you know, I think what people don't realize, if you want to be a man-to-man team, you can't play man-to-man 70 snaps. Your defensive players get tired. They're tired of running down the field. So you have to be able to play some zone. But when you're a zone team conceptually to start with, it's hard to go play man-to-man. And at some point in the game, you got to play man-to-man to get off the field. See, they only allowed almost 10. They were 30th in the league in allowing completions. Houston, outstanding. But they couldn't stop for chunk yards.
Yep. And the last point.
Because if you protect, you can throw it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, the last point on the Indy front here, when the defense failed to generate pressure last year, the Colts secondary allowed a 58% completion rate on throws 10 or more yards downfield, a bottom six mark there in the NFL. Very, very telling on the reliance that you then have on your front seven in front of you. All right, we'll talk some more AFC contenders, and it also leads into what's on Michael's mind for this Monday, because you wanted to talk some Patrick Mahomes today, what he had to say about all these big quarterback contracts.
Well, what I love about Mahomes is it doesn't bother him. You know, the Raiders try to make a fool of him, and he said, "We'll see it we'll get to it when we get to it down the road." You know, I mean, this guy's the best player in the league. He could be the biggest jerk in the league if he wanted to. He could ask for the most money, but he doesn't. He wants to win titles. He wants to chase that three-peat. I did Chris Russo's show the other day, and we talked about Mahomes and the three-peat, and Russo he's such a great historian of the game of football. He talked about the Packers winning in 65, they won in 66, and they won in 67. They technically really were the last three-peat team under Lombardi in that era to do it. And can Mahomes do it? And you would think with all this money coming in, he would feel envious or greedy, and he's not. And I admire him, and I think that's one of the reasons why this Chief team is so good, because they have someone like him who's selfless. He wants to get paid, don't get me wrong. He's going to get respected, but he isn't about, "I've got to control everything." I mean, Brandon Ayuk's out there. We've heard his name muttered 1,000 times in this offseason. At some point, you just get like, he could get traded to a team and you won't even hear from him again.
It's also intelligence.
To me, Mahomes is the right example.
Intelligence for Patrick Mahomes. He gets how the deck is stacked against teams at the top. That's why you don't see dynasties anymore in the NFL.
Right.
It's an exact example of him trying to put team first, which is a team we will get to here. We'll talk some Ravens. We'll also talk Chiefs, two teams who square off to open the season. Those are Michael's burning question topics we'll talk about when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thursday is a big day here at the network. We're releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up before the end of July. You receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like all of our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl, and an early bird discount price of just $175. You could also sign up on a monthly subscription, get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Do not miss out on these preseason deals. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to sign up today. That is vsin.com/subscribe. It's the Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. Our producer Elliot Bowman doing a great job as always, although Elliot, as a Colts fan, not happy with the Samson Ebukam news there, tearing his Achilles out for the year on that D-line. Elliot did a great job though with the poll today, Michael. We want to get an update on that. If you missed it at the top of the show, with the now over the weekend, the remaining the four other quarterbacks besides Joe Burrow from the class of 2020 having their four-year or five-year extensions, we wanted the poll of who would you rather have for the next 4 years from that class of 2020? Outside Burrow, Justin Herbert, 61% of the vote so far, Michael. We're at a little over 1,000 votes. This is open till the end of the show. Jordan Love coming in second, 25%. Jalen Hurts, 10%. No love for Tua at 4% so far. And I've even seen some people saying, "Hey, why don't you put Burrow in that poll?" Although I think that's a little bit ridiculous. That's a little disrespectful to Burrow, because despite the injuries and the early training camp issues, he would still overwhelmingly be my choice on that.
Well, I mean, look, Burrow's a horrendous false start call miss, a horrendous pass interference call made, from winning a Super Bowl in a 4th-and-3rd-and-1 and a 4th-and-run, they failed to convert to get it to overtime. I mean, Burrow played in the big game, one on the road in Kansas City, one on the road in Buffalo. You know, so like Tua can't win a road game. Hurts went to a Super Bowl, so certainly he deserves a lot of that. You know, Herbert has struggled, but everybody recognizes his talent. So I think that's kind of the conversation. You know, Tua's, I mean, he wasn't, it was what they're 4-10 over the last 14 games in the second half of the season 2 years. Now he's been hurt one of those years, but still it's a problem.
I'm a little surprised that the Love-Hurts gap is not closer. I would have thought, you know, you'd expect Herbert to be the main guy selected here. I would have thought it would have been more 50-50 between Love and Hurts. I realize my Wisconsin brethren, you know, we run a strong ship as voting. But, I mean, I mean,
you know, unless you're a true Packer fan, I mean, you have to be a little skeptical about what Love you're getting. Like, if you really like even if a Packer fan, are we getting the New York Giant Love or are we getting the Dallas Cowboy Love? Which one are we getting here?
Absolutely. That's a valid question. I think it also goes into development that we saw and the fact that the order of operations happened in such like a, you know, a natural progression, kind of what you would expect. A younger quarterback finally getting his opportunity after years sitting behind a great quarterback in the system. It is sort of the mirrored and the growth process that kind of leads you to believe, okay, this is more of a, you know, a natural axis going up as opposed to sort of scattered and herky-jerky and up and down. I think that's where the confidence comes into Love. And what's the reality? We talk about this in betting all the time. What do bettors remember? It's what they just saw last. And what they saw last was Jordan Love being absolutely electric down the home stretch in 2023.
No question. And that's you know, it's like the Houston Texans. I mean, what I think the most alarming thing, and you study this as well as I do, Ben, is the Texans are 8.5 win total set. And the only thing that moved it was the Diggs signing. And I think that's a little bit telling right there, that is what moved it to 9.5. And I don't see Diggs being able to make that much of a contribution. Do you?
No, I'm a little squeamish about it. Look, anytime you're going, and I felt the same way about Jacksonville last year. You go from worst to first. Now it's just, you know, there were conversations. Remember last year it was, can Jacksonville get the one seed because their schedule looks so soft? And you're just going, okay, let's push on the brakes a little bit, okay? I mean, it's a lot to ask. And it's similar to how, you know, you have some teams that lose key personnel, and all of a sudden the natural inclination is, well, they're going to fall way off. That's kind of how I feel on Baltimore, who I'm still really high on. I want to get some of the burning questions from you on them, Michael, because it's kind of the reverse, right? If Houston, you lose Mike McDonald as DC, and the thought is, and a couple of big key personnel pieces on that defense, you're thinking, all right, this will be the year Baltimore steps back. Again, what did we see last? It was Lamar Jackson failing in a postseason game in which Baltimore ought to have won based on the personnel, based on the situation they were in, yet could not slay the dragon of Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Now on the DC front, I mean, what do you expect out of Zachary Orr, who comes in? He's been in the system, but it is big shoes to fill. As young as Mike McDonald was, he was outstanding in his previous 2 years at DC.
Right. I think this is really more of a question of Sunday. Monday through Saturday, getting what we want to do, how we game plan, there's plenty of time in the week to really work through that and to kind of get a better understanding of how you want to approach it and do all that. On Sunday, in the first quarter, when you're trying to figure out what they're doing, how do we stop it, what was the matchup, there's a lot going on. And when you only have 3 years of experience as a coach, I think it can be real problematic for you. So I think on Sunday, that's going to be the issue. The other issue is, what's this offensive line? There's a lot of new pieces in this line. Is it going to be as good? You know, is that going to be what matters most for them? And I think if that is the case and Lamar can stay healthy, I mean, he has having a hard time fighting through this virus. And Henry is going to be in the run game. They're not going to get away. If you're going to sign Derrick Henry, you're going to have to give him the football. That's part of it. He's on the field. Everybody knows he's getting it. But it allows you to open up bootlegs, and it allows you to open up nakeds because you're going to be in a pistol 90% of the time. You're not going to be an offset eye if Henry's in the game, because offset shotgun, I mean, because he can't run the ball from that formation. So I think that combination will help. But I think the Zach Orr one's the biggest one. And we're not going to really see it until he goes against the really good offensive coaches, right? So because some of the games they can win with talent. But it's going to be that chess match on Sunday that you worry, can he handle that?
Another really good, and that I agree, that's the preeminent number one question for Baltimore to start things off. I'm really glad you included this, though, on your burning questions. Your list of five, we're just going to go through a few of them here. I was going through some of the positional rankings, just doing my own power ratings, and FTN Fantasy does a great job. They publish all their special teams rankings, and they go deep. It's kicker, punter, holder, long snapper, returners. Baltimore ranks 21st on their special teams rankings, which a lot of people would be like, whoa, you got Justin Tucker, he's the kicker. But as you point out, I mean, Tucker struggled from beyond 50 yards last year, and it is a question I think really well worth asking on the special teams, and is there going to be a drop-off at all this year?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it affects your play calling, correct? I mean, one thing about John Harbaugh, he knows he's got 3 points in his pocket once he got to the opponent 40-yard line typically, right? Now it's a 57-yarder, but with this guy, he could make anything, correct? So am I giving away 3 points? I mean, think about this, Ben. You know, you study the numbers as much as I do. Detroit led the league in the least amount of field goal attempts. They only tried 2 outside of 50 all year because they were going for it on fourth down all the time. You know, 50%, and they only converted 50% of the time. So yeah. Think about it. If you pass up 3 points with Justin Tucker, knowing he makes it, to have a 50% chance of converting fourth down, that's probably not a smart play. That's probably not. And I think now with John Harbaugh, you got to figure out, was Tucker hurt last year? I don't know. Is Tucker going to be healthy this year? Can he make those? But he was not good outside of 50 last year.
It's the one thing that as long as we can remember, since Justin Tucker's been the kicker, it was a question you wouldn't even ask. You already knew. You penciled in exactly what you're getting on the special teams. That is not the case anymore this year. Other good question to ask, too, is on, you know, from a pass rush perspective. I still look at Baltimore having a lot of really, really talented guys. When you have a Roquan Smith still playing at a high level, and some of the other players that have been able to generate pressure, in Adafe Owe as an edge on that line. But at the same time, there are a couple guys now gone that accounted for nearly 20 sacks last year, Michael, and that's a big question mark of who will replace that production.
How do you get that right now? Look, in fairness to them, but part of that, those 20 sacks were the scheme. It was the scheme effect of what they did. They were able to, you know, the way they utilized Kyle Hamilton within the scheme, the way they used Van Noy, the way they used Clowney, that was 19 and a half sacks. And they, you know, and other teams, you know, because they got ahead of people, they couldn't really run the football on them. So I think, to me, you know, Orr's in a tough spot because those are big shoes to fill, that what Mike McDonald did with that defense. And it wasn't just that they were just superiorly talented more than everybody. I think he did a good job of incorporating some guys. I mean, he gets Kyle Van Noy off the Pat McAfee show. He gets Clowney in the middle of August, right? So, you know, he's done a really nice job in that area.
Other kind of, this is not on your burning questions, but I thought it was interesting. This is the 29th toughest strength to schedule. I should say 29th easiest. So fourth hardest strength to schedule by opposing win totals. But Baltimore, most rest edges of anybody. They've got a lot of extra rest. They've a bunch of games where the opposing team is coming off short rest, or Baltimore has, you know, good situations in general. To me, feels like a reasonable thing to point out when you think about how tough this division is. I think that's big for Baltimore, that the rest is very much in their favor with how much of a gauntlet the schedule is.
Yeah, I mean, look, and, you know, we know Baltimore will be ready coming out of the gate. It'll be a great game in Kansas City because both coaches, Harbaugh and Reed, have tough training camps, and they'll have their teams ready to play on opening day.
Yeah, 2 games off of Thursday night, including at Pittsburgh. That's huge to have extra rest against the Steelers. You also have the Raiders, the home opener, with extra rest as well after that Thursday night game in Kansas City. We'll talk some other burning questions later on in the show, but we also have Step Into My Office. Excited to get this. You know what's coming. It's going to be the quarterbacks. We'll go to Michael's office next. Next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk, winger. Step Into My Office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
I've been missing these Step Into My Office editions, Michael. We got a lot to get to today. I mean, it's we got a line outside the office. They're just patiently waiting to, I don't know what's in your waiting room, but we've got a long list today. Anyway, we will start on the quarterback front, because why wouldn't we? We had a couple quarterbacks since we last did this, Michael, from last week, get their extensions off the rookie deal. Tua Tagovailoa, 4 years, $212 million. We'll start with Tua before we go into Jordan Love. Those are the two big names over the weekend. But let's start with Tua. First up, stepping into Michael's office.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think the most important thing you can do is continue to work hard and show that the money isn't going to affect who you are or what you do. But I also think you need to recognize the people around you. they're as much responsible for your success as anyone. And I think you've got to take your game to another level. And I think you've got to try to enhance your game and show people that you can beat a good team, that you can play well in the month of December. And I think this year is going to be a great opportunity for you because you got to go to Cleveland. You're going to have to go to the Jets, which should be a meaningful game at the end of the year, depending on where they are with the Jets in terms of their health. So you can only control what you can control. But I think the most important thing is you staying healthy, making sure you get rid of the football. And I think you've got to endear yourself to your teammates because of the skill set around you. I think ultimately this is why the contract that you've got was as high as it was. And the fact that you've got a 3-year out, which won't cost them a lot of money, tells me they still want you to prove to them that you could stay healthy and you could maintain your level of performance.
And it goes into what can you do now that the money's been taken care of? So many people, like the general narrative is it's always offensive line tied to Tua. When the offensive line is good and he has protection, Tua is great. When it's not there, that's where the attrition happens and the struggles come with the eye level going down and so on and so forth. That, to me, that's like the biggest thing. It's like now you have the money taken care of. How can you focus on that one specific thing that so many people kind of equate to the whole Tua problem or the Tua equation, depending on which side of it you're on?
Yeah, I think to me, and also the way he changed his body, I think he's got to show people that he can stay healthy and take a hit. Because look, we've talked about this. The RPO game for most quarterbacks is expiring. And I think once Philly played Miami the way they played Tua last year in that game, where they spot dropped, they took away those RPO throws, it made it harder for him to make plays and get the ball to Tyreek Hill, get the ball to Waddle. And I think ultimately he's going to have to prove that he can become more than an RPO quarterback, because right now that's when he's at his best.
Meanwhile, Tua starts the Step Into My Office segment. Jordan Love, he strides comfortably into your office, Michael. He's feeling good. 4-year, $220 million extension. Played great at the end of last year. Shepherded in. I, Brian Ortega, Wyatt Tomchek, Packer shareholders here at the network. We ushered Jordan Love into your office, Michael. What do you got for him?
Well, I think, look, for Jordan Love, it can't be bigger than you, right? They didn't pay you all this money for you to carry the franchise. They paid you all this money to lead the franchise. And you can't take the burden of responsibility of winning on your shoulders. You've got to play within yourself. You've got a lot of good players around you. And your defense should be improved. Because last year when you gave up over 200 yards rushing in games, you were 2-2. And you had opportunities. You could have won those games, but you didn't. And the fact is, you'll be better defensively. And all you need to do is execute the offense and be a team player. I think the biggest mistake you can make is to feel pressure to move the needle a little bit in terms of now it's on you to lead the team. Fourth quarter, you're going to have to win the game. You're going to have to get in the huddle and command the respect. But I really think for the Packers to beat the Lions, for the Packers to win the NFC, it's going to take the team. It's going to take all three units, offense, defense, and the kicking game. And you're good at all three areas. I think you got to rely on that. And I don't want you as a player, because you got paid this number, to feel the burden of having to win the game and play outside your comfort zone. I think you play within the framework of the offense, you'll be good enough.
Hey, last time I checked, Jordan Love's name is not Jeff Affley. Like, let him handle the defense. That's been the big issue for Green Bay. Focus on what you can control. That is a great way to look at it for Jordan Love, who is tremendous down the stretch in 2023. All right, from the quarterback room to the guys who catch passes from the quarterbacks. The big wide receiver name, it's Ja'Marr Chase, holed in right now in Bengals camp. Ja'Marr's got some time in his hands right now, Michael, so he's certainly free to step into your office.
Well, I mean, look, Ja'Marr, you're going to get paid no matter what, whether you're practicing or not. I think the worst thing you can do is not go out there and practice. I mean, if you're not going to, nothing's going to affect your earnability over the next years unless your skills start to decline. And so the most important thing that I've learned in my career is when you're not in great shape, when you're not in your peak condition, injuries seem to happen. And what you don't want to have happen is miss time, because you want to be able to be part of the team. They've already told you you're the second best player on the team. And I think more than anything, when Mike Brown admits that in a negotiation, that's a huge statement for him to make. So you got to take that responsibility on. And look, they're allowing you to sit in. Obviously, Katie Brown Blackburn is running the team, because if this was the old Mike Brown, this would never happen. So feel fortunate about that. But I think, to me, you got to stay in great shape and you got to be prepared to have a great season, because technically they own your rights for 3 more years. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't have to do anything. They do not. And you could, just like they did with T. Higgins, you can be the franchise player for two more years. So it might be best for you to keep working on your craft as opposed to thinking that you're on strike and shouldn't do anything.
As great as Jamar Chase is, this isn't like, you can't just assume you're going to be all 1994 Sterling Sharp, just end your holdout the night before the opener and just be at an all-pro level. Like, I think it's a very good point to make, as great as Chase has been, and especially with how the Bengals have been plagued by injury issues in training camp over the last couple of years, whether it's injury or now contract issue. That's Jamar Chase. Now it's time for the big boys here as we continue. Step into my office, Monday edition on the Lombardi Line. I would not be a step into my office without old Jarrett getting the summons from Oxnard, California here. We're kind of wondering what's going on in Cowboy Camp as it's been kind of a shaky start there with all the question marks about who is going to get paid here, as those questions have not been answered yet, Michael, as we're into training camp.
You know, it's funny, Jerry, you always wait late to sign contracts. And I think if you study the history of your contracts, you've not gotten good deals because you've waited too long. I mean, one of the great things about organizations, and you talk to Al Davis all the time on the telephone, and he would often say the greatness of organizations is the ability to anticipate problems, not react. You've done nothing but react to problems. So now how are you going to keep Lamb? How are you going to keep Parsons? And how are you going to keep Prescott? Now, if you tell me quietly off the record that you're going to move on from Prescott, then you better try to get the best deal you can for Lamb and you're going to sign Parsons. Okay, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but I hear you. But to me, you've backed yourself in corners in three levels. Now, you should listen to what trade offers you could get for Lamb, because I think you could replace him. However, if you want to sign him and keep him on the team, which he's been tremendous for your team, then how is it all going to work out? How are you going to be able to, in 2025, sign Parsons, sign Dak, and keep Lamb on the team? How are you going to be able to do that? So, and then add enough pieces around them. So I think you've got to model your team. What will your team look like in 25 if you sign Lamb? If you know what it's going to cost to sign Prescott. You know what it's going to cost to sign Parsons. A lot. They're going to eat up a ton of cap room. You better figure it out. Now, I know you've told everybody you know where the cap's going better than anybody. Great. If you did that, then why didn't you sign guys to contracts earlier?
The wait until the last leaf on the tree quote, it's hilarious to me, because it's just like, why? What's the point? You're not getting yourself any additional value by doing that. But alas, Jarrah, we'll saunter out of Michael's office. We have one more here. Time for one more. John Lynch, GM of the 49ers, has been patiently waiting. Back of the bus, Michael. Last one to step into your office.
John, look, the number one thing you got to do is sign Trent Williams, because you and I both know that this offensive line, if it has to pass protect outside of run action, it's going to be hard. You need him more than anybody. I think your position on Ayuk's perfect. Just offer him what you can offer him and basically tell him to take it or leave it. You got 3 years of rights to him. You own those rights to him, because you're going to have to sign Purdy to a deal. Now, we all know that Ayuk would be smart enough to take a deal now, with escalators in those deals in years 2, 3, and 4, because you're going to get rid of Debo Samuel next year. You know that's going to have to come, because you can't pay two receivers, Christian McCaffrey and then the quarterback. We all know that. Somebody's odd man out. And so Ayuk needs to understand where he fits in this puzzle. And if you could make up the difference in the contract in the second, third, and fourth year with escalators, then you should do that. But to me, the number one thing on your plate, what is the main thing for your success next year, it's going to be Trent Williams, because Kyle will figure out how to move the football. He'll figure out how to move the ball. It may be harder to win games against man-to-man, like the Jet game opening day, if Ayuk isn't playing well. But you've got to be able to block, and you're not going to block the Jets if you don't have Trent Williams.
That's the biggest glaring issue for San Francisco. So well said. I mean, bottom half of the league, offensive line unit. And if Williams isn't there, I mean, like how bad would that unit be? If you were telling me, Okay, no Trent Williams, now all of a sudden that's probably bottom five, right?
I mean, and look, they're all play action. They can't drop back pass protect. That's why the stats on Kyle when he gets behind in games is so prohibitive, because they cannot drop back pass play. That's not who they are. They're a run action offensive line.
Great addition to step into my office. I'd miss these, Mike, but that was really, really good. We'll go through a bunch of random headlines from around the league, injuries starting to pop up, some contract extensions being done, all as we are into the heart of training camp. We'll wrap it up next on the Lombardi Line.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
right now on our new look, VSiN.com. We have all sorts of great articles previewing today's action. Major League Baseball with Adam Burke. The MLB card for today gets underway in about 15 minutes. We've also got all sorts of Olympic breakdown across a bunch of the top sports. That's along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Speaking of the Olympic basketball, Michael, have to, of course, mention Joel Embiid. It's not exactly looked fleet of foot so far. Got torched over the weekend by Serbia, even though the U.S. won. But, I mean, it's not exactly been a great showing so far for
Shocking.
For Embiid.
It's shocking. You're recognizing this? I mean, I got a text from an NBA guy the other day, and it's shocking that, you know, he was telling me how out of shape Embiid was and how he looks. I said, I've been saying this for 7 years. Nobody seems to want to listen to it. But, I mean, I think if you just pay attention, he's impossible to play with, Ben. The ball, he's ball centric, you know, and so all this talk about we need spacing. It, even with the greatest players in the world, they can't space the court with him on it. He's got to be the main guy.
For Michael 76ers, you could also argue the best thing that could happen for the 76ers is a required stint in training for Embiid this summer, which is basically what the Olympics are. So, I mean, I look at it from that perspective.
There's no training for him. He barely runs from the three-point line to the three-point line.
Yeah. You know, we're probably not far off with what's happened so far. U.S. did cover, though, over the weekend. They covered over Serbia, who were 14.5-point favorites. The U.S. were in that game. More Olympic stuff as well on our website right now, VSiN.com. Final poll results here. This is about to close. Justin Herbert, 62% of the vote of our great poll today from our producer, Elliot Bowman. Which second-round quarterback, or second quarterback behind Joe Burrow would you have from the 2020 draft of the quarterbacks who have gotten their rookie extensions here? Herbert running away with this. Jordan Love, 25%. They're in second place. And I can't wait to get to the burning questions once we do them on the Chargers, because a lot of the comments kind of reflect what a lot of us are thinking, which is, yeah, once Herbert gets with an adult as a coach, that will lead to really, really good things. It's just we also want to see it. And certainly we wonder how quickly that ascension will happen with a lot of other holes to fix on that roster, needless to say, for Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, no question. But I think the mentality, you could just see it. You could feel it. Like, I don't know who looks good, who doesn't look good at their practice, nor do I care. We'll watch the game. But you could feel the energy. You could feel the connectivity of the team. You know, I read today where McConkey looks really good at receiver and Blake Corum looks really good. I don't buy any of it. But what I buy is Jim Harbaugh. I buy him. And I buy that the team will play well and the team will be unified offense, defense, and the kicking game. And the quarterback will be better because the quarterback will be coached in a way to where he'll know the protection. The game won't rest on his shoulders. Look, they lost so many close games last year, partly because they put themselves in some bad positions. And I don't think the team had confidence in the head coach. They all say the right thing. But when you go for it as many stupid times as he went for it on fourth down, you lose your team.
Don't think we'll be seeing as many of those from Jim Harbaugh. I think that's a fair proclamation to state. That's a poll wrapping up for today. Also, check out new edition, new podcast episode. GM Shuffle is out now as well with Femi and Michael breaking down a lot of the early training camp stories. Some injuries here that are coming across the wire, too. You feel awful for Christian Barmore. This is not an injury, but it's a medical situation. Treated for blood clots. No timetable for his return. It's a New England team that was really going to be relying on a defense and probably the best unit on that field, Michael, the front seven for New England this year. But a guy you just give an $83 million extension to over 4 years now, we have no idea when or if he will come back at all this year. A major blow there in Jerod Mayo's first season.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Barmore, when he's on the field, he's a dynamic player, but he's not been on the field quite a bit, you know. And it's interesting, you know, for all the conversation about how bad that Belichick was as a general manager, you know, they just redid Jabril Peppers' deal. They redid Duggar's deal. They redid Tavai's deal. You know, Barmore, they signed to an extension. Now, Gotchek, he wants a new deal. But all these players that weren't good enough to play seemingly, or he was a horrendous general manager, Michael Owanu, who's going to have to move into guard because they let him get so heavy, you know, that he's going to have to go in there. You know, it's amazing they brought him all back.
Yep, and it also goes into now, okay, Patriots, you look at a lot of the positional rankings on the D-line, linebackers, secondary, you know, still top half of the league unit in all those regards. You figure if they are going to win any games, it will come by the strength of the defense. But the classic question goes into how much of a drop off will we see when you have the best defensive play caller and a schemer of all time in Bill Belichick now not calling the plays anymore? And how much of those positional rankings are intertwined with how great of a coach Belichick was? Now you flip it forward, just lack of experience all over the board there in general.
Well, yeah, I mean, now Mayo's going to have to be the coach, right? I mean, he's going to have to show up. And I think, to me, if you count on the fact that their defense is going to be as good as they were last year, I think you're wrong. I think there's no question you're going to be wrong. They won't be. And offensively, they should be better just because you can't be any worse, right? They were horrendous last year, in the offensive line particularly. So, you know, Bill's not absolved of some of the things that went wrong there. But the reality of it is they need – they need the count on the defense, especially early, because Jacoby Brissett's going to be the starter. Now, how that works out, we'll see. But again, it's really going to come down to their offensive line. They're tackle poor right now, especially with Iwuanu having to go inside because he's so heavy.
And you have DeMarcus Covington, too. He's the new DC. It's really hard to know, I mean, what to expect, because it's not like Covington has much experience at all either in the play calling shoes. Anything you've heard specifically as far as that goes, when you've got all the newness in general there, and it seems like we're getting more open reports have compared to right. the Belichick pass, which you would not be surprised by.
I mean, look, they're definitely more friendly. Obviously, there's a different regime running it. I mean, you've got Robin Glazer running the team. You've got Jonathan Kraft running the team. You've got more people involved. They took down all the photos of the past, and you know, this is Mayo's program, and we're going to see how he handles it. I think, to me, you know, he's got 25 coaches on the coaching staff, and I have to manage all those people.
It's going to be a very challenging, I would say, year for New England. Although, look, they're the favored to win the fewest games yet. You know, at least defensively, there's a lot more to like than some of the other teams in that same ilk.
Well,
like,
we have Mike Somich on. Are you do you play Survivor, or are you in the contest?
Yeah, no, I do the extremely exclusive VEASAN employee contests, which are they're harder to get in than Circa. Now they're a lot less expensive, but that doesn't mean they're any more prestigious.
Somich is of a believer to just fade the Patriots every week.
Yeah, I mean, I can't push back.
I could see that.
If you have a competent defense going up against New England, great. We were talking so much Cincinnati earlier today, Michael. Great litmus test early. How much has Cincinnati's defense, improved? Or at least hope they would be able to shut down in his, potentially either his first NFL start or the expectation is Jacoby Brissett getting the reins early for New England. But yeah, you would think if you got a top 15 in the league defense, you know, team total is going to be in the low teens most likely for New England on a lot of games.
Yeah, well, I mean their offensive line, like I said, they're tackle poor. We'll see. They put the pads on tomorrow. Maybe some of their young players will come through. But think about this, Ben. 14 touchdowns pass receiving last year. 13 of them came from players that didn't play receiver.
That's not ideal. Not in a perfect world for offensive success. And our last topic here to get to today, speaking of teams who might be a little weak in the offensive part of the ball, Raiders camp underway. Antonio Pierce, head coach, he wants the Raiders quarterbacks, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, in that quarterback battle. O'Connell, the slight favorite at DK to get the week one nod. Wants them to stop with the baby steps and be the guy. Classic words you would expect from a hard-nosed linebacker like Antonio Pierce. The reality is all reports indicate the O-line is just getting the rear ends whipped every single day by the Max Crosby-led front on the other side.
Well, they got two blue-chip players in the front. They're, no matter who's practicing, they're going to be hard to block that team. But the quarterback position is going to be a concern because this team's offensive line has not been good. Colton Miller's still not out there, coming off the shoulder surgery that he had last year. Right tackle's a huge concern. And then everybody that plays in the interior offensive line for the Raiders are more centers than they are guards. They're a team full of centers, not with any guards. And so I think that's going to be the biggest concern. And all these skill players they have, or this great skill, you know, how are they going to get on the football if you can't protect? I think that's the big issue. And so, look, like we said earlier in the show, the Raiders' philosophy is about offensive and defensive linemen and speed and developing players down the line. And this is they've not done that at all. And you draft a tight end in the first round, you know, you're basically saying your team is really complete because you've just drafted one the year before, Michael Mayer, who's a good player.
Sure thing. When it goes into what Antonio Pierce wants to do, the identity of the team is to be physical, run the football, limit possessions. Well, what do you need to be a good running team? You need to be physical. You need to have a good O-line. And that's where the dichotomy starts and where there's really not a lot of cohesion when, as I look at it, as to this construction in general of the Raiders roster.
No question. And it's going to take some time. And how good of a head coach is Pierce? I mean, when you fill in and you become the substitute teacher, but we know this, there's only been four guys that have gone on to be successful. Jason Garrett was one of them. And then he ended up getting fired. But it's hard to take over as the interim and then carry that over into the next season.
No doubt on that. Hey, excited for this week of shows, Michael. Going to be a blast. We'll get the Hall of Fame game coming up Thursday. We'll dive into some burning questions with the Steelers and the Colts tomorrow. Very, very excited for that. Great to be back with you, Michael, as we wrap up this edition of the Lombardi Line. Thanks to Ellie Bowman, our producer. Thanks to Jim Nagy, Richard Skinner, our guest today. Coming up next, Sharp Money right after this here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.